Sit back, relax, and enjoy as Don Tony gives you news and reviews from AEW, NXT, and indie wrestling too.
Know what's happening in the world of wrestling without the hate and clickbait.
It's Wednesday night, Dynamite.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right. Good evening, everybody. November 16th, 2022. AEW Dynamite just went off the air. A little lackluster finish. You would think MJF, you know, John Moxley maybe get into it a little bit, maybe some shoving other than a shoulder bump on the way out. But hey, we got Full Gear this Saturday, loaded card, new matches added, matches that we've been talking about for weeks have finally been finalized. As of right now, the count is up to 11. And, you know, just to let everyone know, if you missed tonight's Dynamite, one of the matches that was added is, in fact, Wardlow, who will be defending its TNT championship, taking on Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs, three behemoths. That's obviously going to be a fun match. Samoa Joe tonight turning heel. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, I think the fans were a little bit confused early on until he disrespected the crowd. Then the fans like, oh, okay, now we're supposed to boo him. I liked it. I liked it. This is a match that we talked about. We talked about Wardlow and Samoa Joe splitting up about 6 weeks ago, that was the intention all along. My concern is what JD and I said almost 2 weeks ago. Once Full Gear comes and goes, what happens to Hobbs? What happens to Starks? What happens to Ethan Page? What happens to others? You know, and it's just common sense. There's only so many slots you can fill on the TV show. And with so many people with championships, you know, it's almost like, you know, you must really suck, or you must not be one of Tony Khan's favorites to not get some type of a championship in some way, shape, or form. Now, as we talked about, it's got to be like 3 or 4 months ago, you know, Bryan Danielson, you know, it almost feels, and I think fans are starting to realize it almost feels like when he went to AEW, like world championships were not on the agenda. He has had some epic bouts in AEW, and I think, you know, he would be in the top three amongst every AEW fan out there who they would want as world champion right now, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen anytime soon. And the Ring of Honor stuff, you know, I'm seeing more and more noise online, people complaining about it. You know, nothing against Ian Riccaboni, but I'm getting sick and tired of him complaining about Chris Jericho trying to ruin the legacy of Ring of Honor, besmirch it and all. I mean, I know, and I almost feel like that's why they did the segment of Jericho attacking Ian Riccaboni, because he is over the top about honor, 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 honor. Does he forget the legacy of Ring of Honor and some of the bloodbaths and some of the non-honorable matches have happened? I mean, he didn't bitch or complain when Samoa Joe cheap-shotted Wardlow last week, you know? Oh, because Wardlow said that he wants everybody's title? That's competition. That's competition. I'm getting a little sick of it. And I think people are starting to realize also, you know, do you notice how suddenly the quarter-hour ratings are so critical amongst all the journalists out there when it comes to AEW? Now, they do cover WWE and they do cover NXT. They have to by default, because if they cover quarter hours for one promotion, they don't do the other two, then it obviously sticks out even worse. But the first 2+ years, other than Brandon Thurston, us, when we were, remember, we would always say, oh, well, it went up 60,000, went down here. I mean, who was really analyzing the trends of who was losing viewers and not? We were doing it every week. I just stopped wasting my time and putting it elsewhere because everybody and their mother does it now. But, you know, let's also be honest. Do you notice how many times Jericho, especially now as Ring of Honor champion, opens up Dynamite? And I think, look, it's not a shot on Jericho. It's not a shot on anybody. I'm a big fan of Jericho. I've been giving him props for everything he's done in AEW. But, you know, you got that lead-in from the Big Bang Theory. And that lead-in is legit. You have over 1 million fans every single time. And there's at least 100,000 plus extra that are still, they still have TBS on the TV when it hits 8 o'clock. They didn't change the channel yet. So they position Jericho for the most part, or Ring of Honor stuff, in that first quarter hour, because they can go back and bragging rights. Hey, look at all the quarter hours that Ring of Honor and Jericho is on and everything. And it's usually quarter one. I mean, we've had main events that close out Dynamites, no question. But if you notice, they are very strategic who they now put in for quarter one, because it is almost a guarantee that you will have the highest rated quarter of the night or very, very close to it. You could put pretty much anything in quarter one and it'll do some decent numbers. So I tell you, I was never a fan of Big Bang Theory, guys. But I watch a few minutes of it here and there leading into Dynamite. And, yeah, you know, more and more I'm starting to get like, you know, maybe I'll check out an episode or two. I never watched the show, never saw an episode. But I was watching a few minutes tonight leading into it. I'm like, it actually is kind of funny. Maybe I will check in on an episode. So anyway, tonight we're going to briefly run down Dynamite. We're going to briefly run down NXT. We will get into this Iron Survivor Challenge or whatever the fuck it is. We will dissect that. We'll get into that in a little bit. We'll also talk about Isla Dawn making her official NXT debut. Yes, she was in NXT UK. Yes, she was in the Mae Young Classic. But her getting involved in a main event last night with Mandy Rose and Alba Fire, she's got a lot of buzz today. You know, this is not somebody who is new in pro wrestling. She's been wrestling for about 10 years. So I'll give you a little background on Alba Fire, of Isla Dawn later on. And a little tidbit that I think quite a few of you out there do not know to this day, and it'll shock some of you out there. You'll get a kick out of it. I'm going to show you a picture later of something that I think a lot of you are going to be like, are you fucking kidding me? No way. I'm going to show it to you in a little bit. And we're going to do predictions for Full Gear. Now, schedule. Remember, I am going on vacation for Thanksgiving next week. There will not be a show next Wednesday. In fact, the only two shows that I will miss next week is Wednesday and Saturday. So for anybody that is interested, that is the lineup from now until the night after Survivor Series. This Saturday, a lot of people are asking about Full Gear. I am not doing a Full Gear recap Saturday night. And the reason why I decided not to do it Saturday night, it's not because there's 1,000 other podcasts all doing reviews at the same time as well. But, you know, with all due respect, you know, we got to get a lot of energy pumped up for WrestleMania weekends, 4, 5 hour, 6 hour shows. You know, in the AEW pay-per-views, they don't know when to say when. You know, it's almost like a kid that goes to like some type of like buffet and has to, all right, go get whatever you want, son. Get whatever you want. He comes back and he's got 85 things on his plate. And you know he's only going to eat maybe 5 or 10 of them. But they don't know where to fucking control, portion control. You know, and we have 11 matches announced. We're probably going to have another match announced for Friday. Then you got the dark matches. I'm not doing this at 1:30 in the morning to start. Be done by 3, and then my whole Sunday is shot. So, Full Gear, I will cover it Sunday night, 8 o'clock, as part of the sit-down. So it'll be a Full Gear sit-down show. Survivor Series next week, I will be covering it on Sunday night as well. It'll be the Survivor Series sit-down. That's what it'll be next Sunday. And this Saturday morning's Don Tony show is still on schedule. That is the thumbnail that we will be putting up there. I'll be doing it tonight. We'll talk about those trademarks that Sasha Banks filed. And, we got some interesting convo to talk about there. So, you know, we got a nice, fun lineup. I'm very curious. How did you all feel about Max Caster taking a shot at Jay Leno this early? You know, for those that don't know, Jay Leno is in serious condition right now. Not life-threatening, but for those that don't know, check out this picture. All right, that is Jay Leno. Jay Leno is an avid collector of classic vehicles. You know, we're not just talking vehicles from 30 years ago. We're talking much earlier than that. But he was working on one of his classic vehicles. That's the actual vehicle that he was working on, by the way, everyone. He, where is my, oh, yeah, it, I'll tell you the car right now. It was a, I think it's like a 1910, but it's a steam engine vehicle. The steam had nothing to do with it. People think that he got steam blown in his face. He was working on a fuel line, and the fuel line bursted and fuel, like, shot on his face. And then somehow an ignition sparked, or something sparked somewhere, and his face caught fire, his arms, his legs. He's in a hypobaric chamber right now. And, you know, he's got a lot of serious injuries from there. So Max Caster, you know, kind of mocking his burns. If you notice, Tony Schiavone and the commentators immediately, I think, tried to cover that. And they were wishing nothing but well wishes to Jay Leno. You know, it's very serious. I mean, it's not life-threatening, but if you look up, like, what it means to be in a hyperbaric chamber, that's pure oxygen going into your body. And the reason why they give you that kind of oxygen the way it is because everything about you needs oxygen to survive, you know, everything. So they're really, you know, this is pretty serious. So, and by the way, did you notice how Max Caster, because of his cadence, listen, Justin Roberts was introducing Anthony Bowens for his match, but Max Caster has to be so focused. And look, I'm not ripping on Max Caster. I fucking love the Acclaimed. You know, one of the few tag teams that I really feel AEW is legit, given a legit push to, and not just the, you know, the flavor of the month. But, you know, he's so focused on his cadence. You know, battle raps is not his style, like spur of the moment, you know, but if he's got to throw one out, he can. He's pretty damn good. But Justin Roberts doing the announcing for Anthony Bowens, and Max Caster's listening to the beat, totally over-talked Justin Roberts. Justin Roberts, I don't even think, finished. So I thought that was pretty funny. But, yeah, and you know what? Hey, we got an appearance tonight by Captain Insano, everyone. Captain Insano. Big show. Flashbacks of 1995, I think it was. Was it 95, 96? They're calling him Captain Insano. So the music video was funny. I like the music video. Very, very talented guys. But I got to be honest with you. I thought that was a little tasteless of taking the joke at Jay Leno. Not this soon, in my opinion. So, all right. So let's briefly run down AEW. So this way we could get right into predictions. So AEW tonight, we had Claudio Castagnoli, Brian Danielson beating Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. Claudio pinned Jericho. And that's done, you know, by design because, look, we have the pay-per-view this Saturday. You know, they're trying a suspension of disbelief that Jericho, you know, could be vulnerable. Claudio may have his number. You know, Sammy is obviously a wild card because everybody thinks that Sammy will do whatever Jericho tells him to do. I'm sure there'll be some falling out there and there'll be some competitiveness. Brian Danielson, hey, just rewind what I said about 10 minutes ago. I think you know how we feel about that situation. But Claudio with the swing and then putting Jericho in the sharpshooter, Jericho taps out. So great match. Now, look, even though the quarter hour, first quarter of Dynamite is a little falsely inflated because of viewers that are still on TBS after watching Big Bang Theory. But that match earned whatever good rating it gets. So, you know, they're not putting shit matches in quarter one. They're trying to get non-wrestling fans. They see a couple of familiar faces. Hey, let me stay on this for a little while. So the match was fun tonight. I enjoyed it. We get a little video package from Darby Allin and Sting. Now, if you remember Jeff Jarrett talking about body bags the week before, we had Sting driving in his convertible, and Darby Allin is in the back seat in a body bag. He unzips himself. He puts himself on the front seat. And, yeah, as I'm watching this vignette, like, I don't know if any of you watch On Patrol Live now. If any of you remember Live PD, I was obsessed watching Live PD. I like watching in real time, you know, all the fuck-ups out there getting in trouble from the cops. It's amazing how many people drive around with suspended plates and no licenses. It's unbelievable. But with them wearing the makeup the way they do, especially how Darby looked, I would love to, you know, see these guys get pulled over, you know, just wear it with the makeup on and everything. But, you know, nice vignette, you know, to lean into Sunday. Jeff Jarrett talking some smack, you know, bringing up a little bit of the history with him and Sting that go back a couple of decades. So they will have a match. Look, the card up and down, you know, I've seen a lot of people say that the card doesn't feel strong. I disagree. Is it the strongest card that they ever had? No. I think what's happening is because there's so many titles and because so many are defended, teased on the regular shows, that some of the titles don't feel strong. They don't feel very important. So when you see some of these matches going down on pay-per-view, yes, they're going to be longer. Yes, the quality level will go up a little bit, but the feeling is not what it used to be. But I looked at the card up and down. I think it is very, very strong for Saturday. Pay-per-view buy rate wise, I mean, they'll probably get like 100, 110,000 buys, I think, which would not be their best, but you know, I think that's a fair showing. You know, everybody touting today that they're about to get a million-dollar gate for Saturday. You know, to me, I think the more important number is how many tickets were sold. They sold 11,000 tickets, approximately, and they have a little over 900,000 at the gate. You do a little bit of math. Yes, I know it's a pay-per-view, but that means the average ticket is over $80. So, yeah, you can, you know, stack up that money, you know, but when you realize that, you know, maybe the overall ticket sales are lower than what they should be, you know, because look, you could turn around and talk about the crazy amount of money that's being sold on some shirts, and then you realize the shirts are $40 a pop. Sure. You know, you have to sell less shirts to get to the financial goal. I mean, that's technically what's happening in the economy right now. If you really think about it, why do you think some things that you buy now are twice the price? It's not just because it's in demand, but because gas costs more and expenses cost more and minimum wage is a lot more than what it used to be. So in order for me to offset all those increases, I got to double my price for other things. So sure, hey, look how much money we made, but then you realize you sold a lot less than what you used to. So I think that's a big deal. Yeah, this is my Mike shirt. You know, it's kind of like a ripoff of Nike, you know, Nike. All right. Max Casper interrupts Justin Roberts. They show the music video. Pretty funny music video. I like the Paul White doing the Captain Insano. They obviously, you know, he's not going to do this on a regular basis. But look, Paul White's in much better shape. You know, a lot of people miss him in the ring. You know, Paul White has some physical issues, so you really won't see him in the ring all that much. But hey, I don't think the fans would have a problem if he makes a cameo, even with the Acclaimed. Why not? But unfortunately, Swerve Strickland did beat Anthony Bowens tonight. The focus and the main part of this match today was the shoulder. Strickland working the shoulder of Anthony Bowens. Anthony Bowens selling that the shoulder might be an issue for this Saturday. When you get to my predictions, I'm pretty confident, Swerve confident, pretty confident that the Acclaimed will retain. I don't think there's any chance whatsoever. I think Saturday will be the swan song of Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. There will be dissension there, and maybe Swerve even leaves the ring and walks off. We may see more than one time Saturday where somebody walks off on someone. Samoa Joe cuts a promo, explaining his actions, attacking Wardlow. He reminds everyone of Wardlow talking, you know, running his mouth the last couple of weeks, talking about how he wants everybody's title. Samoa Joe took offense to that. And he said, Samoa Joe, that he refuses to be a victim. Now, up until this point, you know, Samoa Joe, people don't know how to react to all of this. The goal, The goal is to get Wardlow even more over as a babyface. So when Samoa Joe is talking about how he refuses to be a victim, people still don't know how to react. But then he says, right after it, he says, unlike most of the people in this building. So everybody's like, hey, wait, that's like a shot at us. Like, yeah, fuck you. So Samoa Joe plays the heel. He wants Wardlow. Hobbs comes out and he says, hey, Joe, you're a little late at the game. I've been attacking Wardlow the last couple of weeks. Wardlow's music hits. Joe is looking at the rampway. Come out. Come out, Wardlow. Wardlow comes up from behind him. You know, don't expect that to happen to Saraya. I'm sure you all know. We talked about this last week, about some of the restrictions with Saraya's matches going forward because of, I don't know if she actually said PTSD, but we'll talk about that in the predictions. That's an interesting thing. That's something that I'm going to be looking for now. It sucks that that's probably going to be my peak interest of seeing that match on Saturday. So anyway, Wardlow comes up from behind Joe, gives him a spear. Next thing you know, all three guys are going at it. Back locker room comes out, wrestlers, security, officials trying to break it up. You know, and this is all designed to set up the match. We talked about Wardlow and Joe breaking up 6 weeks ago, maybe even longer than that. This three-way was in the build for a while now, and they made it official tonight. Joe's title is not on the line, which makes me think that Joe may be the one eating the pin Saturday. All right, Britt Baker. You know, tonight, this was the thumbnail for tonight's Dynamite. Let me throw it on the screen. You know, we'll hear from Britt Baker and Saraya. They have Tony Schiavone and Renee in the graphic as well. Neither one were face-to-face. Britt did a pre-recorded promo. Saraya did a pre-recorded promo. Now, Saraya was with Renee Paquette. Britt Baker was by herself. Britt Baker cut a very brief but very powerful promo. And Britt Baker basically said, look, you know, I've been in AEW for 3 years and I've turned into originally this person just happy to be in AEW, nervous to the leader of AEW. She gives props to Saraya. She's nothing but respect for Saraya for overcoming her demons, battling everything she's done in her personal life. But when it comes to inside the ring, she thinks Saraya is living in the past. And she also brings up, yeah, maybe you fought in Madison Square Garden. But you know what? I fought in Daly's place in Jacksonville. I fought there for a whole year when the fans couldn't even come. The darkest period of wrestling in modern times. You know, and that's very powerful. Fans didn't pop that hard for it, but for AEW fans, that's a respect factor. And that respect factor is extremely deep with Britt Baker. That's why, if you remember my show last Wednesday, I said every time Saraya would talk about herself and some of the things that she battled and overcame, the fans popped. The minute Saraya would ever take a shot at Britt Baker, fans booed. Not in unison, but a majority booed. So you got to be very, very careful how you tread water with Britt Baker in any feud. And that's AEW's fault. That's not Saraya's fault. But Britt Baker talking about, you know, fighting in Jacksonville for a whole year, you know, when the fans couldn't be there, there's a respect factor there. And Britt Baker finishes a promo by saying, AEW is my house. So, very good promo. Both women did great promos tonight. The Death Triangle beating Top Flight and AR Fox. I think some people should lighten up a little bit. You know, like, why is AR Fox getting a title shot? Look at his record, this and that. You know, if you look at the backstory of AR Fox and what he's overcome, I know, you know, you said, okay, that's a cool thing, you celebrate it. Did they need a title shot? No, they didn't need a title shot today. That's why I personally think you don't just hand out title shots just to make it feel more important. You know, there's no reason. You could have done an eliminator match if you insisted. But AR Fox ends up eating the pin. Pac hits him with the Falcon Arrow. And here's where it was pretty interesting. Did you notice tonight that Pac and the Lucha Bros were on the same page. There was no falling out. Even after when Pac got on the mic, started talking about what's going down on Saturday, the Lucha Bros right there with him. He's right there with the Lucha Bros. And basically Pac gets on the mic and he says, look, what do you think, we're stupid? We've seen the videos. We know what's going on. He says, you know, he throws down the challenge. You know, if you want what we got, show up Saturday. And, you know, you would think. Now, I'm not, look, it's very delicate how you go with it, because if the Lucha Bros look at Pac like, what are you, stupid? Like, why are you setting up this match? Why are you doing that without talking to us first? It makes the Lucha Bros look weak. If the Lucha Bros cut that promo and issued the challenge Saturday, then you could have had Pac look at them and like, what are you doing? We don't just hand out titles, opportunity. What are you doing? So that was kind of off today. So it's almost like they had to be in unison tonight. But a graphic shows on the screen, and it is official. The Elite will be returning this Saturday to challenge the Death Triangle for the AEW World Trios Championships. That is official for Saturday. Matches on. Now, we have a little bit of a mess. And we will look at two different scenarios when we get to predictions. All right, there is a mess going on right now with this. The World Title Eliminator Tournament. Last week, Ricky Starks and Lance Archer did not occur because Ricky Starks was, quote-unquote, not cleared to wrestle. So we already had Ethan Page beat Eddie Kingston. We already had Bandito beat Rouge. Now, last Friday, we had Brian Cage beat Dante Martin. So you would think logic would be, tonight on Dynamite, you have Lance Archer versus Ricky Starks. Now, my guess is that we may find out that maybe one or both couldn't appear today, but it doesn't make sense because I'm assuming Rampage is live Friday. I would think that it's live. Maybe it is. Maybe someone could check for me, you know, and don't guess. But the thing is, if it's pre-recorded and it's going down tonight, why is Lance Archer and Ricky Starks not on tonight's Dynamite? Why would you have Ethan Page and Bandito go tonight? Because now, as a result, we already have one side of the tournament brackets done. Because tonight, Ethan Page beat Bandito. Rocky Red says it's live. Okay, I trust Rocky Red that he actually looked it up. So it's live. So that tells me that either Ricky Starks or Lance Archer were unable to appear tonight at Dynamite. And because logic would tell you, and everybody was saying online tonight, like, wait, this makes no sense. Why would you finish the one side of the brackets where we still have two more matches to determine who is going to be on the opposite side? So we had Ethan Page beat Bandito. Bandito looked freaking awesome today. Little shimmy shimmy. I looked more like the rodent from Caddyshack. Gopher? Gopher! Don't I do that? Like, do I look like Eddie Guerrero? Maybe if I go like this. When I do it like this, you know, it looks like I'm the gopher popping out of the hole on Caddyshack. That's why I don't do it. So Ethan Page, not too much of a reaction. The crowd tonight was kind of mild. I don't know if anybody else noticed it. The crowd, I didn't like the crowd tonight. Seemed very mild. I don't know. But Bandito looked tremendous tonight. Bandito lost. And honestly, you know, I would have no problem with Bandito going to the finals on Saturday. But Bandito gets the loss today. Ethan Page hits him with the Ego's Edge for the win. So now we know that Ethan Page will be fighting Saturday for the Eliminator Tournament final. On the opposite side, we have to still figure out who wins between Lance Archer and Ricky Starks, which will happen on Rampage Friday. But then whoever that is has to also face Brian Cage. When we get to predictions, I will give you two different scenarios of how this could go down this weekend, and we'll do predictions for both scenarios just to cover it. Saraya, she cuts a promo. She talks about Britt Baker and basically, for the most part, her ultimate, you know, objective in this promo was, look, I came to AEW to fight the best. Britt Baker, you are the best. And this will be Saraya's comeback story, but she wants to fight the best in her comeback story. And so tonight kind of showed that there is mutual respect on both sides, but very heated, you know, because both think that AEW is their house. I think it's everybody's house, you know, politically correct, 2022. Tony Storm over Anna Jay, not much there. Jamie Hayter comes out afterwards, try to add a little more heat for their match coming up on Saturday. And then the closeout for tonight, Jon Moxley comes out, cuts a promo, takes a few shots at MJF, talks about, you know, the Jon Moxley feels that he's the best wrestler in the world today. You know, I don't know if that was trying to take a shot at CM Punk. And I saw some people on social media. Anytime you call yourself the best wrestler in the world, everybody thinks they're taking a shot at CM Punk. You watch after Rampage on Friday at 11 p.m., that countdown to Full Gear, you will see multiple people in AEW say that Jon Moxley is the best wrestler in the world. But Moxley talks about Saturday, and he says that MJF talks about MJF that his training wheels are going to fall off this Saturday. It's almost like a kid, you know, trying to ride a bike, and you know this is going to be MJF. You know, he's not going to win Saturday, but you know this is his chance to start showing everyone who he is. And then we get the stupid shit, man. You know, what do they call him now? W. Morrissey. They get W. Morrissey comes out. Stokely Hathaway comes out. Lee Johnson comes out. And, you know, they're all attacking Jon Moxley. So now MJF comes out to make the save. And now we're thinking, okay, you know, this is the final Dynamite before Full Gear. You know, you would think maybe kind of a brawl between Moxley and MJF. Get the officials to come out there. You get, you know, some type of a pull apart, add a lot of heat, trying to jump on people. You know, I don't want to say to the level of Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley's build to Crown Jewel. But if you remember when, you know, Bobby Lashley called them out and they had that big pull apart, you know, that just pumps people going. You know, just having people run down to ringside and people making a save, that always gets a pop. But I think they could have done a lot more tonight with MJF and Moxley. MJF comes out, makes the save, sort of. And then MJF starts cutting a promo. And he didn't do this to help Moxley. He has to win that title. He needs that title more than he needs food, oxygen, water. And they had a stare down. And ultimately, Moxley walks off, leaves the ring. And as he walks off, he like bumps into MJF's shoulder, like, you know, get out of my way. And you know, no physical interaction with William Regal and no hint of MJF as far as, you know, turning heel or, you know, remaining a heel. I know they're trying to fill the void of CM Punk, so they kind of had to go this way with MJF. But I don't know, didn't feel like the tension that should have been. You go off the air with this crazy pull apart, you know, that I think that would have just ended it much, much, much more passionate. I don't know. It just felt, this felt like a promo that you have against your opponent 2 or 3 weeks before your match, not the go-home show. You know, imagine, you know, look, you don't want to compare it to other champions. Use Seth Rollins and anybody. Use Roman Reigns and anybody. Use other people. And the final Raw or SmackDown before premium live event, that they just have like a little bit of a heated conversation, nothing, and they just leave the ring and just stand there. All right, so that was your episode of Dynamite. Now, on Rampage Friday, we have Eddie Kingston and Ortiz versus Jun Akiyama and Konosuke Takeshita. I'm not going to use the fucking Excalibur pronunciation. Konosuke Takeshita. Just, I hate when he does that. And Rey Fénix. For 10 years, they're calling one wrestler a certain way. And then he comes along. No, it's Rey Fénix. Konosuke Takeshita. Ricky Starks versus Lance Archer in the quarterfinals of the tournament. Hook versus Lee Moriarty. Athena versus Madison Rayne. And nothing really to set up Dynamite. Now, they did make it official today of AEW going to London in 2023. We talked about that a few weeks ago. But they did publicly, officially announce it tonight. So as soon as we get some on-sale information, I will share it with everyone out there. So, all right. Before we get into full gear predictions, a couple of quick things just with pro wrestling. Actually, I'll show you something you get a kick out of. Sort of has to do with AEW. This weekend, Liv Morgan was at an autograph signing. In fact, there was a couple of big ones that went down this weekend. We had the big event here in New York. Some of you sent me very cool photos with WWE stars and other wrestlers as well. Well, there were quite a few people that showed up to meet Liv Morgan and take pictures. And some wrestling fans were wearing AEW shirts. So Liv Morgan had a very creative way to take the pictures, be polite, and kind of like hide the AEW logo. So I have three of them to show you right now. Now, hey, she's close to you. She's touching your left titty. You know, I think, and that guy kind of looks like Roosh. Like, I want to be Roosh. He looks like Roosh a little bit. But she took the picture, and where her left hand is, she's actually covering up the AEW logo. That is one picture. Here's another one. This one is good also. All right. That guy has an All Elite Wrestling shirt on as well. And what she did was she told him, put the championship title over your shirt. And she had a little animated pointing to the championship. So that's how she was a little creative there. This is probably my favorite one of them all. There's a lot of pictures online, but this is my favorite one of them all. You know, that guy looks like, who's the agent for the Iron Sheik? Oh, my God, I know him. You know, I don't want to say I was ever friends with him, but, you know, I was a little bit friendly with him for a couple of years. Oh, someone out there's got to remember, who's the Iron Sheik's agent? You know, oh, my God, I used to hang out with him at the Mass Maniacs events also. But anyway, he looks just like him. But this guy, obviously, he's got an extra large sweatshirt on. So she actually had to put both hands over the AEW logo. But you know what? Look at Liv. You know, she's posing. She's smiling. She's got funny looks on her face. She's laughing it up. Do any of those fans look angry that she covered up the logo? I don't think so at all. Dream, it's not Joe Johnson. I think you probably did a quick Google search, and that's the first name that came up. All I remember is that he's Jewish, and he had a bald head, and he looks just like that. So someone will mention it later on. I'll give you a shout-out if you get it. So props to Liv Morgan. You know, I know people were force-feeding that she was going to turn heel, but she gets along with fans so much, and she is so beloved in the wrestling community. I mean, some people didn't like her championship reign, and I don't blame anybody out there for feeling that way. But overall, she's got, like, such an awesome personality. So, you know, you're wearing, and look, I don't believe any of those fans were wearing AEW shirts to try to be funny. You're like, oh, I'm going to take pictures with WWE stars and I'm going to wear the competitor's law. I think they were just there to meet everybody and they're not going to go in the bathroom and change shirts. So, all right, congratulations to Deonna Purrazzo and Steve Maclund, both of Impact Wrestling. They got married last Thursday. Unfortunately, though, I don't have any wedding pictures to show you except for one. Somebody posted like four pictures online, and you know that you are fucking lazy when you know how you take a screenshot of your iPhone. I think if you hit like one of the buttons on the left of your phone and one on the right, you push them both together and it'll snap a screenshot of your phone. Whoever took this picture, not only did they do that, but whoever posted it online took a picture of somebody else's iPhone. Instead of uploading the fucking photo to Instagram, they took a picture of a picture of a screenshot. And I'm like, why would you even put it online? You can't even make anything out. The only photo on the entire net that is surfaced is this one. And guys, gals, I mean, I know the whole idea is they're under this probably like 3,000-year-old tree, and it's a beautiful-looking photo. But I can tell you that's me. You know, I mean, obviously that wasn't my wife, because my wife by far has had the greatest wrestling dress of 2022. But that is the only post. So I tried to zoom in as best as I could, and that's the best I could come up with. So congratulations to Deonna Purrazzo and Steve Macklin. Very, very cool. I like hearing good news. You know, good news feels good, especially when it happens to all of us as well. I wish good on every single one of you out there. All right. Couple other things to get into really quick. Just going through my notes here. We could get out of this. And yeah, let's talk briefly about NXT. Yesterday, they had a little bit of a hype for the event, two championship matches. We had a contract signing as well. But the big news coming out of yesterday was the Iron Survivor Challenge. Now, I know I'm going to get myself in trouble. Look, it is what it is. You know, I still have remnants of big asshole DT from 15 years ago. But a couple of weeks ago, we heard that WWE trademarked the term Iron Survivor Challenge. And most people, yeah, SoFly knows what's coming. I talked about it yesterday on Patreon and in the watch party. Shout out to everybody who is at both, or either. When we heard about the trademark, we figured, okay, it's probably NXT, and maybe it's a new match concept that's going to replace War Games, because War Games now will be a main roster attraction. Sure, NXT could still do War Games down the line, but usually, you know, every, you know, brand between NXT and WWE has their own thing. That's why you don't see Halloween Havocs taking place on, you know, on the main roster and a few other things. So anyway, but we weren't sure. Now, Shawn Michaels, they teased an announcement a week ago and it had to do with deadline. So some of us thought maybe it's the location, maybe it's certain specific matches, what number one contenders, whatever. So we found out yesterday that the announcement that Shawn Michaels was going to make was the creation of a new match called the Iron Survivor Challenge. All right. I'm going to read you the rules of this. And you think about it as I read it to you, and then I'll explain why I'm going to get my mouth in trouble a little bit. Sorry. Now, the winner of the match, there'll be a men's Iron Survivor Challenge, and there'll be a women's. So the winner of the men's and the winner of the women's side will become the next number one contenders for the heavyweight championships. Bron Breakker, Mandy Rose. So, five superstars will compete in each match. Five. Five is the magic number. And remember with Survivor Series, the bloodline, it will end up being five people, and on the opposite side, there'll be five people. They're not going 4-4. So five wrestlers will compete in the Iron Survivor Challenge. Now, how it works is, and to me, my first reaction is, wow, this is TNA Impact Wrestling all over. If it just had TNA vibes when we were thinking about it. But anyway, you start with two wrestlers in the ring. Every 5 minutes, a new wrestler hits the ring. So you have two wrestlers to start. At 5 minute mark, the third wrestler comes in. At the 10 minute mark, the fourth wrestler comes in. At the 15 minute mark, the fifth wrestler comes in. All right, so far, okay, no big deal. The match has a 25 minute time limit. So whoever comes in last is only going to be in this match for 10 minutes. Now, the winner of the match is determined by who has the most decisions, pinfalls, submissions, count out victories, disqualification. Now, you won't see later on in the match count out victories. Because if you have four, five people in the match, even if two people are outside the ring, if they get counted out, you're not going to award a point to each person in the ring. You think about it, it's stupid. So you realize quickly some decisions would never happen. I'll give you another one. The first 5 minutes of the match, you're not going to have any decision. I guarantee you, and I'll tell you why. Because every time somebody gets pinned, submitted, counted out, disqualified, somebody who loses a decision, they go in a penalty box for 90 seconds. So they're out of the match for 90 seconds. So now imagine the first two people in the match. And let's say somebody pins the other one. What do you do? If the other wrestler, the third person, is not out there yet, the person you were facing goes into the penalty box and you just sit there and chill. So you're not going to see a pin or a decision for the first 5 minutes. Once everybody's in there, you're not going to see a count out or a disqualification, because then you're going to get who gets the win, the people who were not involved. So it's a little bit of a mess. So at the end of the 25-minute mark, whoever has the most decisions is the winner, survivor. They get the title shot. Now, when I thought about this yesterday with Shawn Michaels, yeah, I'd take the glasses off for this one. Like, it almost felt like to me that Shawn Michaels was watching Survivor Series with one eye and watching War Games with the other eye. You know, like watching both matches at the same time. He had two TVs going. One is this way and one is this way. And I think, like, he watched both TVs at the same time. He's like, oh, I got an idea. He was watching the Survivor Series match and an Iron Man match at the same time. And he's like, hey, I got it. It's almost like it would work better if it was Tony Khan. Tony Khan is just chilling, smoking a blunt with a couple of wrestlers. And he's watching, like, vintage wrestling. And he's watching, like, I don't know, Bryan Danielson in, like, a Iron Man match. And then he's watching the Survivor Series. Yo, dude. Dude, what if we did both? Dude, I'd survive a match. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like Shawn Michaels was watching two TVs at the same time. One eye is this way. One eye is that way. And you're like, I don't know which one to do. Oh, I got it. Let's just do both. That's the vibe I got from this. I'm sure it'll come out better than what it is. But to me, it's so fucking complicated. You know, and it shouldn't be that complicated. Hey, look, it's NXT, it's developmental, so what? But this really reeked. It felt like TNA Impact. Something tells me, unless you do some major tweaking here, I don't know if this will be brought back for a second year. But they trademarked it, so, you know, they might try to tweak it as they go along. So, all right, so that is your Iron Survivor Challenge. Bron Breakker opened up NXT yesterday, beating Von Wagner. It was a decent match. I think the problem is there was no doubt in anybody's minds that Bron Breakker was going to lose this match. Everybody knew he was going to win. I think the big news out of this match, and most people didn't even take note of it, you know, towards the end of the match, Von Wagner pushed Robert Stone. He had climbed up to the side of the ring. And, you know, Von Wagner was almost like, you know, get out of my way, and just, like, pushed him to the floor. And for those that saw it, you know, we all think now, okay, this might be the beginning of the end of Von Wagner and NXT and the swan song for him and Robert Stone. Because if Von Wagner goes to the main roster, I don't think Robert Stone follows him. I don't think that whatsoever. So something tells me that split is happening. But it was a decent match. Bron Breakker gets the win. After the match is over, you know, he's getting a little bit of props from JD McDonagh. Now, JD McDonagh later on had a banger of a match with Apollo Crews. We all anticipated it was going to be a really, this might have been Apollo Crews' best match in NXT so far. Apollo Crews beats JD McDonagh. Apollo Crews is going to be your new number one contender for the time being. Now, remember, whoever wins the Survivor Challenge, you know, he's going to become the next number one contender. So, you know, Apollo Crews is probably not going to be in that Survivor Challenge. But Apollo Crews wins yesterday. He will ultimately face Bron Breakker. I know we talked about that a few weeks ago, that that was a match that they were working on. Indus Sheer, Sangha and Veer Mahan, they reunited in the ring yesterday, beating George Cannon and Jake Fingado. You say Fingado, I say Fingado. They looked awesome. I was a fan of Indus Sheer. I mean, I still can't believe they fucked up the way they did when Keith Lee became a double champion in NXT. It makes me want, and you know, it fucked up Stokely Lee Hathaway as well. They were on so much momentum at that time, and you know, it makes you wonder if they would have been promoted to the main roster, you know, sooner at that time. But it really fucked both guys up. But Veer Mahan and Sangha, you know, people are, a lot of people out there are only seeing them team for the first time. You know, a lot of people don't even know that they were a team before, but they looked great yesterday. And they called out the Creed brothers. So they're going to go right at it with the Creed brothers. So you know there's going to be, you know, some good action there. Zoe Stark hits the ring, addressing why she turned on Nikita Lyons. Basically, she feels she's undeniable. She's unstoppable, that she was on her path to becoming women's champion, and then they wanted her in the tag team tournament, and then she got sidetracked because of injury with Nikita Lyons and everything else. Like, you know, and basically, you know, she was trying to throw shade at the fans. Like, you think of Nikita Lyons at night before you go to sleep, and, you know, this is a woman that's more concerned about doing TikTok videos and shit like that. I think Zoe Stark took a little bit long yesterday. I thought she repeated a couple of lines. I think she got a little rattled yesterday. Crowd was sort of into it, but I don't think it did. Personally, I would have rather seen Nikita Lyons maybe show up halfway into that promo and they go into it a little bit. Cut that promo in half, have another pull apart, you know, because the last vision we see of Nikita Lyons, he's almost crying. And that should have never been. We talked about that last week. When Zoe Stark grabbed her by the hair, Nikita Lyons, right on that hard center camera, she should have had a look on her face. Like, just think of her spots in that reality show that she was on that a lot of people still don't know about. She should have had that look on her face like, bitch, I'm going to fucking kill you, you bitch. But she had a look on her face like she was weeping. She was weeping. Why did you turn on me? Why are you pulling my hair? Why did you hit me with the belt? Andre Chase waited a week to question Duke Hudson while he threw in the towel. Still not working. I'm holding out hope Bodie Hayward is brought back. Give him a second chance. He didn't commit any wellness program violation. Didn't have any falling out with the roster or brass. He just got a little too complacent. The WWE has room to bring back Bodie Hayward. Let's keep hope. Wesley, Carmelo Hayes, they have the contract signing, moderated by Booker T. This was fun. Booker T, man, I saw a lot of people last night thinking that Booker T should be the new William Regal for NXT. And guess what? I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but you all got to start thinking about this. You know, we're almost in December. Once January comes, we're going to start preparing for Pat McAfee to return as a commentator for WWE. And most people feel that Pat McAfee is going to go into his role back on SmackDown. Where does that leave Wade Barrett? I don't think Wade Barrett would go to Raw because even though, you know, Wade Barrett and Corey Graves are fun, they're very similar in their insult. And both of them with what's-his-face doing it now. Who's the other guy I'm doing a Raw commentating right now? I'm drawing a blank. It's late, everyone. I've been up since 6:30 this morning. You know what I did last night, everyone? Show you how I fucked up. I take Ambien to go to sleep. Kevin Patrick, by the way. I take Ambien every night to go to sleep. I've been taking it for 10 years. And what I do every night, I do the same ritual every night. I take 3 or 4 magnesium pills, and I take a sleeping pill at the same time. Knocks me out. And around 4 o'clock in the morning, I then take my pill for cholesterol. And then that's it. I go back to sleep. I wake up the next day, fine. So last night, I take my magnesium. I take my sleeping pill. I try to fall asleep like around 1 o'clock in the morning. I wake up about 45 minutes later, wired. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm on YouTube watching videos, watching this. I can't fall back asleep. And for the next 2 hours, I would wake up like every 20 minutes. Like, I felt fucked up. So at 4 o'clock, a little after 4, I said, let me go take my cholesterol pill now. Thank God I looked. I went down to grab the pill, and I looked at it, and I realized, oh, fuck. I didn't take my magnesium and sleeping pill at 1:30 in the morning. I took my magnesium and my cholesterol pill. So it was too late for me to take a sleeping pill because it was 4:30 in the morning. I had to get up 6:30 to start preparing for work. So the whole night, I got no sleep. I forgot. I couldn't take my Ambien. So, all right. Let's wrap up NXT. So, Wesley, Carmelo Hayes, they're going to fight next week for the North American Championship. I love Booker T's role. Honestly, I would put Wade Barrett back on NXT, put Booker T as a commissioner. I think that would work. The problem is, Wade Barrett has shown he's fucking great on the main roster. You know what I mean? Like, you could always put Wade Barrett, fill him in for Corey Graves or someone else. He is great. I love Wade Barrett on commentary, but I think you put Booker T in the commissioner role. The only problem with that is how often would he be needed for TV? You know, maybe Booker T, maybe the plan is, hey, Booker, do you want to commentate for NXT until Pat McAfee is ready to return? And then once he comes back, maybe you do commissioner once in a while, you make an appearance. That could end up working. So I tried CBD, more words. It doesn't really work for me, so. All right, the Dyad beat Brooks and Jensen yesterday. Towards the end of the match, we had Kiana James show up once again, and she gets shoved, and she accidentally falls onto Josh Briggs. He fell onto Josh Briggs, and it was funny because they had this awkward look, especially Josh. It was almost like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? And obviously it causes interference, a little distraction. Dyad get the upper hand, and they take advantage with Brooks Jensen. They get the win. Indy Hartwell beats Tatum Paxley. Tatum Paxley's wearing a mask to protect her face. Ivy Nile is at ringside as well. Indy Hartwell takes the mask off and starts wailing on Tatum Paxley. Tatum Paxley's holding her face, and that makes her paralyzed because while she's holding her face, Indy Hartwell gets a pin. You know, she couldn't kick out because she had to cover her face. Ivy Nile with this horrible look on her face, like, wow, Indy, you're awful. And then Indy, she goes to the back, and we even said it yesterday, okay, here comes the pain in the ass. Roxanne Perez shows up. I am a big fan of Roxanne Perez. But yesterday, she came across it like that annoying pet. The annoying pet, like, sometimes you have a bad day, you just want to be left alone, and you, like, walk into a room, and a fucking annoying pet is just standing there, like, waiting, like, hey, you're supposed to take me out to pee, even though you took me out to pee an hour ago. And an hour before that. So Roxanne Perez is like, did you really need to do that? And Indy Hartwell was like, yeah. She wants to be in that Survivor Challenge. Main event, Mandy Rose beating Alba Fire. It was last woman standing match. And match was really good. I was very surprised at how many people had really thought that Alba Fire was going to win this match yesterday. I have said it many times before. You know, she is good. She's very good, but she still has a long way to go. And yeah, look, Alba Fire definitely has enough to be NXT Women's Champion, but it just didn't feel like the title was going to change yesterday. And, you know, the match was good. The crowd was into it. Towards the end of the match, we had an appearance by a former NXT UK women's wrestler. And what happened was we were getting ready for a table spot. Mandy Rose laid out on the commentator's table. There is a ladder positioned right next to the table. Alba Fire climbs the ladder. As quite a few of you pointed out yesterday, how did Alba Fire not feel, you know, like that somebody was climbing the opposite side of the ladder? But as Alba Fire is on the ladder and she's about to dive off, putting Mandy Rose to a table, and possibly getting the win. She is greeted. I'll take my graphic off. Where are you? Where are you, Mr. Graphic? There you go. All right, this happens. And this could be- Welcome. Welcome. So, we get Isla. She shows up, making her NXT, you know, American debut. Yes, she was in the Mae Young Classic. Yes, she was on Raw. A lot of people, I have photos. I will share it with you. But anyway, she shows up, and, you know, Alba Fire is totally shocked by it. And what ends up happening? Well, this happened. Isla Dawn, do what you do best. Nice. Nice. Remember that one, Khan? Not Tony Khan. Who's the guy? I almost said Genghis Khan. Who's that idiot from New Japan that showed up with, they fought against best friends, and they, one of them put Trent Beretta through the table. What the hell is his name? He was with Jeff Cobb. Anybody remember who Jeff Cobb's tag team partner was? He was about Great O'Khan, yes. I knew it was a Khan somewhere, the Great O'Khan. Go back and you look at that when Trent Beretta went through the table. It is one of the worst. I mean, honestly, that's almost like Iron Sheik Hacksaw Jim Duggan getting pulled over in a New Jersey Turnpike bed, because you literally just showed the wrestling world that you jumped off and dove yourself onto a table. And here comes the Great O'Khan. It's the Great O'Khan, Charlie Brown. He like kind of like acts like he pushed him with his head and totally fucked it up. And you know why O'Khan fucked it up, if you ever watched that move? Because he decided to get a little animated, and the minute Trent saw the animation, he thought, oh, O'Khan is pushing me off. So Trent does that. Inexcusable. Totally inexcusable. But you look at that yesterday, Isla Dawn, you know, great spot. Looked stiff. Alba Fire goes to the table, cannot respond to the 10 count, and Mandy Rose retains. So we'll probably now see a feud between Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, and that's the right way to go. Get Alba Fire away from that championship picture, you know, because she is not taking that title off of Mandy Rose. She got two shots, did not win. Now it's time to move on to someone else. So that was your episode of NXT yesterday. I wanted to show you this. I thought this was pretty cool. Remember that MMA fighter, Valerie Lourada, L-O-U-R-E-D-A, Valerie Lourada. She signed with WWE, what, 6 weeks ago? Can't be 2 months. And she never trained to wrestle before. She's been an MMA fighter. So she signed with WWE, and believe it or not, over the weekend, she had her first match for NXT. She teamed up with Bronco Nima and Zion Quinn, and they took on Andre Chase, Thea Hale, and Duke Hudson in a six-person, you know, intergender match. You know, so she posted a little video. I wanted to show you the video because she came off so sincere, and she got a little emotional. Like, you could see that she wants to be a wrestler. But is it just me? Does she look a lot like Sasha Banks? I mean, look at her. I mean, she's not a splitting image, but I don't know. She reminds me of NXT Sasha Banks. I don't know. Will you be the judge? This is Valerie Lourada right after her match over the weekend for NXT.
I did it, guys. I just debuted exactly a year ago for my last MMA fight, and I didn't know that was me my last time with gloves on. But I love what I do, and I was born to do this. I'm so excited, and I can't wait for this journey. Today, my WWE journey has begun. I love you guys. LV.
I just figured I'd share it with you. Might get a kick out of it. She does remind me of very early Sasha Banks in NXT. So, all right. So, Isla Dawn. You know, a lot of people don't know who she is. Some of you may not remember this, but she actually wrestled on Raw. She had a squash match. Oh, who was her opponent? I don't remember if it was Asuka, but she had a match on Raw and she did the job. She went under the name Stacey Coates. Maybe somebody remembers who her opponent was. I thought it was Asuka. Maybe it was someone else. But she wrestled on Raw for one match last year. She was also in the Mae Young Classic 2019. Now, I was looking for photos to share, and I found a picture that was on the Wrestling Figs website of her appearance in the Mae Young Classic, and something caught my eye. And I know some of you know this already, but I guarantee a majority of you do not. You might find this very interesting. That is her, and she is in the Mae Young Classic. But take a look at the referee. Does the referee look a little familiar to you? I wonder how many of you out there are aware of it. But believe it or not, for a very short period of time, Aubrey Edwards was a WWE referee and in the Mae Young Classic. I'm telling you, some of you out there who already know this, you will be shocked to shit how many people have no idea that she was a referee for a short amount of time in WWE. Yeah, I just figured I'd share it. Like, I did not remember that she refereed, you know, Isla Dawn's match in the Mae Young Classic. But look, she's 28 years old. She has been wrestling for about 9, going on 10 years. You know, she's wrestled for Stardom. She's faced people like Nikki Cross in the past. She wrestled for NXT UK for a couple of years. She's got a good 10 years under her belt. She's very, very good in the ring. Now, there's a lot of pictures of her online, but most of them are her pre-WWE days. A lot of people that are into her character, I think, are into her because of her goth look. I don't know how much of that will remain, you know, for NXT these days, but she's got a pretty damn good resume under her belt. I mean, for the most part, it is NXT, indies for 3 or 4 years, and she wrestled for Stardom. She was in the Mae Young Classic for a cup of coffee, and like I said, she wrestled on Raw one time as well. But, you know, when WWE did the mass releases a couple of months ago, when NXT UK closed and they were going to ultimately debut NXT Europe, there were quite a few names that they did not release, and she was one of them. So it was only a matter of time that she was going to make an appearance here in the States. Now, unfortunately, like Maiko Satomura, you know, we really haven't seen her much after that. Blair Davenport, we haven't seen much of her recently either. So hopefully this will turn into a little bit more of a frequent appearance on NXT here in the States. I think once NXT Europe is ready to start going and having shows, you will see some of those women back in the UK on a more permanent basis. But, you know, pay attention to that name. Keep that name in the back of your mind, because she actually is a lot better, I think, people realize. Just because you never heard of her before doesn't mean that she don't have some ability. Now, I don't think she made the PWI 150 this year, you know, which, you know, it is what it is with that magazine. But, you know, go check her out. She's got a few matches on YouTube. I think one with Nikki Cross. She had a match with Nikki Cross. I think that one is on YouTube. I remember seeing it probably about a year ago. And I'm pretty sure it was YouTube. I don't think it was that Daily Motion, whatever that other shit is. So, all right. What else do we have to get into? All right, we could do Full Gear predictions. You know, actually, right before we do Full Gear predictions, you know, we talked on Sunday in great detail about Tyrus winning the NWA championship. Billy Corgan, and that's why I use the term smashing pumpkin. If you looked at the graphic, the thumbnail from Sunday, that is the font for his Smashing Pumpkins album, the one that really, you know, sold well back in the day. But I think he's smashed. I think he's drunk. I think he's drunk on power. I think he's drunk. Him thinking that this is what NWA right now is where ECW was in 1995. What the fuck are you on right now? It is nothing like 1995. But basically, after Tyrus won the NWA World Championship, Nick Aldis went on Instagram and wrote this statement, and I quote, this is a kick in the nuts to Billy Corgan. He says, this was right after Tyrus won, "I hope you now see why it was important for me to let you know that I had given my notice before the pay-per-view. What was once a promising endeavor that I turned down bigger opportunities to take the lead on has become the most toxic brand in professional wrestling. Thank you all for the support." So the plan was for Tyrus to defeat Nick Aldis at this pay-per-view. And obviously the other participants as well, you know, Matt Cardona, Trevor Murdoch. But, you know, this guy now calling NWA the most toxic promotion in pro wrestling, man, that is a major blow. But I got to share with you one other remark. Nick Aldis, you know, responded to what Billy Corgan said on Busted Open. Billy Corgan continuing the media rounds, trying to grab any interview he can with anybody who has a big audience out there, trying to convince people that his narrative is the way to go. You got to see what he said to justify Tyrus and Trevor Murdoch in this match. Look at this. Look at this remark. He's comparing them almost to Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar. So earlier in the interview, he's saying that he believes a lot like in Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley because of their sizes. And he says Tyrus, who's 6'8", 375 pounds versus Trevor Murdoch, who's 6'3", and 350. I want to see that match. If you don't want to see stuff like that, don't watch the NWA, because that's what I'm going to give you. More and more of that as we climb. And I'm kind of able to develop younger talent in the mold of the NWA. We will be the toughest, hardest hitting wrestling promotion in the world. I know there's the strong style in Japan, but to me, that's a different psychological. It's hard to explain. Yeah, it's hard to explain because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You got to go check out. I don't know if he was talking to JBL, but I don't know which show he was on, but he was comparing it to, like, why do people want to see Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley? Why do people want to see Omos versus Big Show? Why do people want, I mean, not Big Show. Big Show I got on the brain, Captain Insano. Braun Strowman versus, why do you want to see Behemoths? You know, the guy has totally lost it. I don't know where this goes from here, but, man, he's totally fucked up, man. Eric Bischoff did an interview with Wrestling Inc., they were talking about CM Punk and if he should go back to WWE. And Eric Bischoff believes that WWE would be fucking nuts to bring back CM Punk. Eric Bischoff said, and I quote, and then we'll give you a full gear predictions. He says, and I quote, "I don't know what Paul Levesque is thinking. I don't know what their plans are, their strategies are. So I have no idea. I could tell you from my perspective, I would not touch CM Punk with a 10-foot pole. I think CM Punk had a mystique because of WWE, because of the pipe bomb interview, and because he walked out and created this aura and mystique that Tony Khan brought to AEW and took advantage of for a minute. And once that mystique was gone, once you kind of let the air out of the balloon, now you're just performing every week. I didn't see it in Punk. I just didn't see it in him as a character. I didn't see it in him as in the ring. He was good, but he wasn't phenomenal. He feels that CM Punk is old. He's fragile. He was never in great shape to begin with. He did not start out as an athlete. And now at 44 years old, he's fragile as hell. So what would you do with him, especially in WWE, where the intensity, the physicality, and the schedule is so much more than it is in AEW, just the sheer workload? He feels, do not sign. And look, originally, for a WrestleMania match, I think it would be great. But once you open that can of worms, fans would not accept CM Punk coming in for just one match. You know, because I thought about it. I'm like, okay, how much of a risk if you put CM Punk in a match at WrestleMania against whoever? You know, it's only one match. Once it's over, it's over. You treat them like a celebrity. You know, like Johnny Knoxville. I'm not saying to have that kind of a match, but once Johnny Knoxville had that match, that's it. He's done. By the way, I heard Johnny Knoxville might be in the Royal Rumble again this year. You didn't hear it from me. Not saying it's going to happen, but... All right, so, you know, maybe for one match, but the problem is if CM Punk has a good match and has a great match, everybody's going to turn around and say, no, you got to keep him, you got to keep him. And then it runs the risk that if you have any type of falling out with this guy, you're right back to square one. So I don't think Triple H would treat CM Punk like Sasha Banks. Hey, Sasha, take 6 months off, go fill your bucket list, do all the things you do, and then you come back in 2023. I think if they bring back CM Punk and have another falling out, I don't think, hey, take 6 months off, do your bucket list, fight MMA, do whatever you want, and then you come out. No, I think it's get the fuck out. Fucking forget we even exist. You know, don't give him the Benoit treatment, but yeah, that's why the more I think about it, I think maybe the best thing to do is, I know this sounds awful, because I defended CM Punk that night at a scrum. I defended him. I still defend him now. He was truly the voice of the voiceless. He is truly the voice of the voiceless of those in AEW who are sick of the politics, that can't speak out, that don't have that power, that don't have another option out there. CM Punk stood up. CM Punk put it on a platform that was so wrong that it would become a major news story. Everybody criticizes him, but everybody puts the clips of his media scrum shit on YouTube to get a million hits off of it. You know, it's like, oh, this is wrong, but they put the fucking clips up because they just want attention on themselves, you know? So that was the perfect place to do it, because if you don't do it there, where are you going to do it? So, but I also feel that maybe CM Punk has burned so many bridges that you just leave him to rot. Leave him to rot. Let him go to WOW. You know, figure out something for him to do in WOW, you know? All right, let's talk about Full Gear. We got 11 matches to talk about. And, you know, some of these matches, extremely predictable. I think we all agree on that. Don't forget, again, I will be doing a recap as part of the show Sunday night at 8 o'clock. We will be doing a Full Gear sit-down. I like the way that sounds. So you could join me Sunday night, 8 o'clock. We will talk about what went down at Full Gear. And but remember, we still have a show Saturday morning. And we will talk about, you know, all of the news going on. We'll see what Dynamite's rating is. I don't know. Dynamite, for the first hour, I enjoyed it. Flowed really, really nicely. I think towards the end, it just really seemed just filler. You know, I just felt very filler. I don't know. I don't think they break a million viewers this week. I think they probably would stay around the mid-nines again, maybe like 955 or something like that. But all right, let's talk about it. We got predictions. Saturday, November 19th, AEW presents Full Gear. Let's run down the lineup. Where are you? Hold on. Why do I not? Okay, here it is. I forgot. I put my little Full Gear logo over there to start it off. Okay, we're going to start off with more of the predictable matches than anything else. Why? Okay, there you're moving. Jade Cargill defending the TBS championship, even though Nyla Rose stole it and has it. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Jade Cargill's undefeated streak is not ending at Full Gear. I've defended Nyla Rose many times before. I like Nyla Rose's work. Great heel and okay in the ring, but you're not ending Jade Cargill's streak with Nyla Rose. I personally think, because people keep asking me every couple of weeks, who's going to dethrone Jade Cargill? And my answer is, you know, maybe somebody that's not even on the roster right now. You know, I don't see anybody at the moment coming close to Jade Cargill losing. Jade Cargill may have multiple years of a winning streak before that happens. So this is obviously, if you had to bet your life on a match for this weekend, you bet on Jade Cargill winning this one. She will beat Nyla Rose. She will get her baby back. And Jade Cargill, you know, inadvertently is becoming a baby face. I don't know if people realize it. You know, not a clear-cut baby face. You know, she's going to still be that bitch, but you're going to start seeing the crowd chant it with her because I am that bitch, and you're going to hear the fans. I'm telling you, give it a week or two, and you'll hear majority of the audience doing it with her. You watch. Another very predictable match, in my opinion. I could be wrong. I'm very surprised how many people online that think Swerve and All Glory are going to regain those tag team championships. As I said at the beginning of the show, the Acclaimed, it feels organic. Not many runs in AEW have felt pushed because it felt organic. Like, it always felt that Tony Khan had a plan, you know, could be good, could be bad. I'm not criticizing it, but this one, it felt okay. You know, the fans were so loud and for so often that next to FTR, they are the second most over tag team in AEW. You just listen to the siren when that music hits and the crowd fucking erupts. Yes, a lot of it is fluff. A lot of it is Scissor Me. It's Billy Gunn. It's a lot of things. A lot of us thought, you know, like, why are you putting Billy Gunn with them? Now you look at it and you're like, wow, that's like, it worked out great. Why wouldn't you put him with them? But unfortunately, you know, we're not going to see much of anything Saturday other than I think Swerve and Our Glory will split. You will have Keith Lee that will not like some of the antics of Swerve Strickland, and either Swerve Strickland just walks off on his partner or maybe he does something physical to Keith Lee. But that will ultimately be their demise. The Acclaim will win and retain their tag team championships. Next, Jungle Boy Jack Perry versus Luchasaurus in a steel cage. I know there was some rumblings that Luchasaurus was injured. A few people said it last night. I had emailed a couple of people. One person got back to me and said that, you know, he's good enough to go. The cage match is still on. I'm going with Jack Perry to win this because Luchasaurus does not have to be pinned. So something could happen. Maybe he's handcuffed to a rope, you know, the ring rope, something. You know, Christian obviously can't get too physical, but Christian will obviously try to interfere in some capacity. But I think in the end, you got to give a little bit of a momentum now to Jack Perry. Luchasaurus, I know it's a mixed bag with him. Either people love him or they can't stand him, but Luchasaurus is intimidating and he actually can squash people. You know, he's gotten better. But I think if you're going to give a victory to Jack Perry, you don't want Luchasaurus to be pinned. So Jack Perry could win and Luchasaurus does not have to be pinned. So I'm going with Jack Perry and we'll see how he incapacitates Luchasaurus so he could exit the cage because that could be the way to go. But I'm going with Jack Perry to win. All right. So now we start getting to some more difficult matches to predict. Well, this might actually be one of the last ones that it's very predictable. Jamie Hayter has quickly become my favorite women's wrestler in AEW. I know there's a lot of you out there that feel the exact same way as me. Jamie Hayter, unfortunately, I put her in the same boat as Ricky Starks, put her in the same boat as Powerhouse Hobbs, put her in the same boat as Eddie Kingston, put her in the same boat as a lot of others out there that no matter how loud the fans get, no matter how much the buzz online is in favor of the said wrestler, if they're not one of Tony Khan's toys, they're not one of his favorites, if they're not one that, you know, that he feels is in the mix for something bigger and better down the line, they don't get the opportunity. You know, we were talking about it yesterday on Patreon. Eddie Kingston, you know, they tried to start getting cute with his promos. Like he's in the back and he's like, you know, don't count me down. I'm going to keep talking. You know, you don't tell me what to do. And people online think, wow, you know, Eddie Kingston, he's like kind of shooting on Tony Khan. Like, hey, I deserve this time. No, that's just him trying to keep it real. But that's all planned out in advance. And, you know, Jamie Hayter, as much as I enjoy her, I can't see her taking this title from Toni Storm. Something's got to give in January with Thunder Rosa. And yeah, you could put the belt on Jamie Hayter, put it back on Toni Storm in a month or two, and then you could pick up with Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm where it left off if Thunder Rosa is good to return in January. We don't know yet. It's still early. But I just don't see Jamie Hayter winning it. Not because I don't think that she can handle it. Not because I don't think she's ready or not ready. I just think that, you know, Toni Storm with AEW and Tony Khan, she is the one. If you look at the intros, yeah, she's a champion. She's in the intro. But you can see, you don't see Jamie Hayter featured. And no, you don't have to have a belt to be featured on vignettes and promos and advertisements. You don't see Jamie Hayter's name promoted anywhere when they show a lot of the billboards. You see a lot of the thumbnails that they make, a lot of, oh, we're going to come here, oh, we're touring here. You don't see her face on there that often. So I'm going to go with Toni Storm to retain. Now, as we're doing this, we're thinking, okay, you know, we got to get a title change somewhere. Now, obviously, the tournament is not going to lead to a title change. But again, we have this Eliminator tournament. Oh, that's a very small graphic. What a shit graphic. All right. Well, anyway, here's what we got. And I'm going to give you two scenarios of how this could go down. We already know on the left side of the brackets, Ethan Page is in the finals. In the quarterfinals, Eddie Kingston lost to Ethan Page. And we have Bandido beating Roosh. Tonight on Dynamite, we had Ethan Page beating Bandido, so Ethan Page goes to the finals. Now, the right side is all fucked up. And this Friday on Rampage, we have Lance Archer taking on Ricky Starks. Brian Cage has already beaten Dante Martin. Problem is, Friday is the day before Rampage. So if Ricky Starks wins on Friday against Lance Archer, he still has to face Brian Cage and win that match to get into the finals. When does the winner between Lance Archer and Ricky Starks face Brian Cage? Are we going to have two matches on Friday? Is Brian Cage going to come out there and start an impromptu? So could it be a dark match? Could we have Ricky Starks versus Brian Cage as a dark match for Full Gear, you know, the kickoff, and then later on in the night, Ricky Starks has to wrestle again? Personally, I don't like that idea because, especially for the caliber of match, you know, Brian Cage is not going to lose to Ricky Starks in 2 minutes. I think it's going to be a much more competitive match, and that's asking a lot for Ricky Starks to wrestle at 7 o'clock at night and then come back again at 10 o'clock at night to wrestle a pretty, you know, deep match with Ethan Page. So the only two scenarios I have is that maybe something happens on ramp. There's three scenarios. The first scenario is Brian Cage comes out after the winner of Ricky Starks and Lance Archer happens. And then we end up with an impromptu match. And then maybe we get an abrupt victory by whoever it is that faces Brian Cage and they go on to Full Gear. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is Lance Archer and Ricky Starks wrestling as a pre-show match on Saturday, and then later on, that winner will have to take on Ethan Page. But again, that's asking a lot. The third scenario, which could happen, is we end up with a three-way at Full Gear. Ricky Starks versus Ethan Page versus Brian Cage. How they explain it on Friday would be interesting since Tony Khan doesn't come out there and cut promos and announce matches. So if there is some bullshit on Friday, then we would have to go to commercial, come back, and then the announcers announce live on Friday that it'll be a three-way on Saturday. So those are the three scenarios. No matter which scenario it is, I'm going with Ricky Starks to beat Lance Archer. I'm going with Ricky Starks to beat Brian Cage. If it ends up a three-way at Full Gear, I'm going with Ricky Starks to win it all. Ethan Page versus Jon Moxley would be a fun match, be a nice little rub for Ethan Page. You know, because we felt by now he definitely would have gone a lot further in AEW, and he hasn't. I think people forget how good he was in Impact. But I think Ricky Starks needs something. The feud with Hobbs left him in purgatory. Remember when he cut that promo right after he lost the FTW title? We thought you could compare that to Austin Theory. You know, it's funny, all the people that got it way wrong about Austin Theory Monday, they're like, oh, it's a life-saving, a career-saving promo. No, nitwits. He was never being buried. It's just a shift in the character. No more selfies. No more smiling. Now I'm pissed the fuck off. I'm not a boy. Stop calling me a boy. It's not rocket science. People make it sound like, oh, if he didn't nail that promo Monday, he would have been let go or demoted. That's because people, their mindset was wrong from the beginning. But Ricky Starks, when he cut that promo after he lost the FTW title Hook, remember how buzzing the internet was after that promo. It felt like, finally, they're turning the page with Ricky Starks. And then they did the shit with Hobbs. That went for 2+ months and it went nowhere. So I think Ricky Starks right now, he needs that. Especially since he has no momentum right now. Winning this tournament gives him a title shot without having a storyline. Moxley could fight Ethan Page whenever he wants. Tony Khan could announce it this Wednesday at Dynamite. World title eliminator match, John Moxley versus Ethan Page. You could do that whenever you want. You don't need a tournament for that. Ricky Starks, if he wins this, he won a tournament. It wasn't just a random match given to him. That's why I'm going with Ricky Starks. Okay. Gets a little more difficult as we go along. This one may not be that difficult. Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal versus Sting and Darby Allin. Now, the interesting thing about this, if you notice, there's no Sting's rules in this match. There's no, you know, like falls count anywhere, street fight. I get this weird feeling that on Friday, Tony Khan will change that. Oh, they could brawl whatever they want. This is Sting. We got to have him dive off of fucking stages. We got to dive over tables and this and that. You can't have a straight-up match. So I think this turns into maybe some type of a street fight. I don't think Sting and Darby Allin are going to lose this one. Darby Allin has lost more matches than I think people realize in 2022. And Sting rarely ever loses. And I think Jeff Jarrett was brought in to, you know, have a legend versus a legend. And I'm going with Sting and Darby Allin to actually win this one. I think it'll be a fun match. I hope they turn it into a street fight. You know, how many more years are we going to see Sting do what he can still do? Or I should even rephrase that. How many years left are we going to see Sting do things that we never really saw him do before? I mean, you know, I still remember that match that he had with Abyss in TNA. That was incredible. But you look at his career, I mean, he's doing crazy shit now that he never ever did back in that day. But, you know, in defense, most wrestlers didn't do any of that either. So, all right, moving on along. There's no doubt here. Wardlow is going to defeat Powerhouse Hobbs, Samoa Joe. I think Wardlow pins Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe doesn't lose his championship. Hobbs is protected. He didn't get pinned. I think Joe has no problem doing the favors for Wardlow. Joe is a legend. He is a future Hall of Famer. Samoa Joe keeps his title. He will defend it at that pay-per-view that they're doing for Ring of Honor in December. Who knows? Maybe we'll get Hobbs versus Samoa Joe on that pay-per-view. Problem is Hobbs is also a heel, and I don't feel that they're turning him into a babyface anytime soon, even though I'd have no problem with that. But I'm going with Wardlow to win. And Darren, they got rid of that ranking system in August. Best thing they ever did. I'm not taking credit for it, but, you know, we exposed how ridiculously awful that ranking system was. You go with your vibe. You go with your gut feeling. You see something out there. You see something developing. You know, you got, and plus, by getting rid of the ranking system, you get rid of the interaction with the wins that are done on YouTube. You know, I always brought up the Ruby Soho example. She had like 30-something wins, and only two of them was on television. You know, oh, she's got 35 wins in AEW. Then you realize 33 of them are on YouTube. You know, so I like that they got rid of the ranking system. Do number one contenders. Look at FTR. Look at FTR. We talked about it 3 weeks ago. FTR has been a number one contender for the tag team championships for about 6 months. In 2022, they have had, I think, a total of six matches in AEW, not including AAA, IWGP, six-man tag. Or I'm just talking straight-up AEW tag matches. Like, that in itself is ridiculously stupid. So you keep the ranking system, keep it away. There'll always be people who complain about it being gone, but this allows a lot more creativity. Okay. Continuing on. Britt Baker versus Saraya. I know on the surface, Saraya, comeback story, what an incredible story to culminate with a win. Saraya is standing there in the ring, crying, getting the win. I don't know if we've seen a sign of respect between Saraya and Britt Baker after the match. I wouldn't be so sure to immediately assume that Britt Baker is going to lose this one. Now, I'm going with Saraya because I think, especially bringing her in and the story, this is a story. Yes, there's a lot of personal shit attached to it, but it's not just the story of battling drug addiction. It's not just a story of bad relationships. It's not just a story about a serious neck injury. It's not just a story about, you know, emotional issues, depression, you know, PTSD. PTSD has been thrown around. You know, that's a term you don't rarely ever hear anybody say it in the pro wrestling world. You hear it in the military world more than anything else. So, you know, some people, you know, have gone to the extent that, you know, if Saraya has that much of an issue emotionally, why is she in the ring? Well, my answer to that is because pro wrestling is what makes her happy. And that probably is part of the therapy. So I personally think this is a comeback story. And if she can really go, you give her the win. Britt Baker loses no momentum with this. If Saraya, with all due respect, if she stinks up the joint, if she looks extremely limited, and we get a win because Rebel tried to interfere and it backfired and Saraya gets a fruit roll-up or something like that, I think the fans will quickly turn on her. You know, the fans do not want to feel that Saraya was handed a victory. So if she's going to win Saturday, she's going to have to earn it and earn it big time. And I think she will. She has worked out in the ring quite a bit. You know, it's not like she just gave a doctor's note and like, hey, I'm cleared, you know, and then book her for full gear. AEW have seen what she can do. Britt Baker has seen what she can do. So they know what they have there. So, you know, we will see on Saturday. Now, when I was talking about earlier, especially with the emotional stuff, you know, Saraya said in an interview with Renee Paquette that one of the issues that is going on right now is she cannot be attacked from behind. That you can't, like, creep up on her and hit her from behind. That even though this is scripted, it is entertainment, there is still something psychologically going on that she cannot be attacked from behind, like a blind spot. I personally think that that will be rectified pretty quickly. But my thing is, and this is one of the things I'm going to be watching on Saturday, once you're in the ring, once the adrenaline is going, once the crowd is pumped, once you realize that you're performing in front of 10,000 people, 15,000 people, you got, you know, 100,000 at home paying for it, when you realize how many people have eyes on you, you know, you sometimes, you know, forget and you just go into, you know, almost, it's like riding a bicycle, you know, or anything you do, you know, you just don't have to think about it. You just go with your instinct. And I think because in pro wrestling, you know, especially heels, when they attack wrestlers, sometimes they do it from behind. I think that's going to happen. And I think it could happen on Saturday. And I'm not saying that it's being done to intentionally, like, fuck her up or anything like that. But I think once you're in the ring and things are so quick, sometimes you don't even have time to think. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Saturday. But look, this is cool that she is well enough that she can return. As of right now, she can only wrestle once a month. And the doctors told her, if you feel banged up afterwards, you take as much time off as you need. AEW is aware of that as well. So, you know, when you start seeing these news articles, because I'm sure you've seen some in the last couple of days. Oh, Paige chose AEW over WWE because of creativity or, you know, having a little bit more creative power. Bull fucking shit. She went to AEW because WWE, you know, they basically said to her, oh, you know, if you want to be back in the ring, you know, we can, you know, work to make that happen. There was no certainty that she was going to return to the ring anytime soon. Not only that, look at WWE's schedule and you look at AEW's schedule, you know. So those are the reasons why she signed with AEW, plus the money. She got paid a lot. But, you know, they start saying, oh, well, she gets more creative power. Bullshit. Okay, moving on. You only have a couple of matches left. Talk to me. Why do we stop? Wait a minute. That cannot be. Hold on a second. Why do we stop at 10? That's not very good. Hang on a second. Let me see why this stopped at 10. I don't know why that happened, but that's okay. We could fix that. Let's see. Full gear. Where are you? Here you are. Yeah, that's strange. I'm going to pull up the matches this way. All right. So next to last match. Well, actually, we got three matches left. Okay, here we got one. The Death Triangle defending the AEW Trios Championships against the Elite. As we talked about earlier, it was made official today that the Elite will be returning. I mean, I know we reported that, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Obviously, you know, a lot of people are over the CM Punk saga. They want to get over it as well, the Elite. You know, I think people will suddenly realize that it's going to feel like we're back in 2000 when it comes to AEW, even with the backstage politics. They're going to do a media scrum Saturday night as well. So, you know, that media scrum is going to have the Elite there, and they're going to talk about their return. They're going to get emotional, and they're going to duck all the questions about CM Punk. You know, they'll probably tell all the reporters before they even do the scrum or even before they start televising it, listen, anything about Punk, we cannot talk about. Don't even bring it up we cannot talk about it. Then you got to see which reporter is an asshole and brings it up anyway. But no, it's going to be 2020 all over again. And it's going to feel like what AEW was before CM Punk arrived. And I personally think, even though it feels very, very predictable, we got to get a title change on this show. Some point we got to get a title change. I'm going with the Elite to regain their Trios Championships. I think Pac, remember I said earlier that somebody, more than one person, is going to walk out on their partners? Swerve could do that with Keith Lee. I go with Pac also with the Lucha Bros. I think Pac will want to do something. I think the Lucha Bros will be against it. I think Pac will be so pissed off about it that he leaves, he walks off. Maybe he attacks one of his partners. And he doesn't give a shit about the championship. I think that could very well happen. I think the Elite are going to regain their championships, plus for political things. You look at the Colt Cabana thing. Let's see how many times Colt Cabana is on TV over the next 2 months. And let's see if they really brought him back. You know, you realize that was just done to piss off CM Punk. You know, so they're going to want their shit back. This will be a big fuck you to everything that happened as well. We overcame, you know, they even overcame the almighty CM Punk. I'm going with the Elite to get those championship titles back. And then we'll see if the Death Triangle officially split. For the Ring of Honor World Championship, Chris Jericho defends the championship against Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, Sammy Guevara. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever Chris Jericho will retain. It'll be interesting if he pins Sammy Guevara. Claudio winning tonight was to give that suspension of disbelief that Claudio may have Jericho's number. We all want Bryan Danielson to have a championship there. It just doesn't feel like it's in the cards at the moment. Maybe that happens when they absolutely must do it. But man, does it sure feel that it almost feels like there was a discussion, you know, quite a while ago. Like, look, you know, I'm here to wrestle and I'll do whatever I have to do, but, you know, I don't want to be focused as far as a champion. Like, you ask yourself, how the fuck do you go this long and not have a championship on Bryan Danielson, especially when everybody and their mother has one? Motherfucker doesn't even have a trophy. Don't have a ring. Don't have nothing. Doesn't have nothing. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that changes with Ring of Honor. Even though Bryan Danielson has a history in Ring of Honor, this is not your daddy's Ring of Honor. This is a guy that's force-feeding a promotion that was never big, that was never drawing a huge audience, that was around for two decades and still drew flies, let's be honest, had to piggyback other events and other promotions to try, and that's what they're doing now. They're piggybacking on AEW to try to get Ring of Honor bigger. It didn't work in other ways. So I just don't see Danielson getting this championship. Jericho's going to win. I think what it comes down to is, does Jericho pin Claudio or does Jericho pin Sammy? I think what happens is somebody hits a finisher on Sammy. Maybe it's Claudio. And somebody hits a finisher. Then when they try to go for a pin, Jericho maybe throws them out of the ring and Jericho steals the pin. And then Sammy will be upset, obviously. But then Jericho on Dynamite could say, look, you know, Sammy, you were going to get pinned. I saved it. You know, the Jericho Appreciation Society still has the championship. I think Jericho could very well pin Sammy Guevara here and be sneaky about it. So I don't see him pinning Bryan Danielson, in case anybody asks. I don't see that happen at all. All right, the main event. Jon Moxley defending the AEW World Championship against MJF. You know, this could go either way. This could go either way. A lot of people, you know, think that it's MJF's time. My gut, honest gut feeling, no, it's not. No, it's not. MJF will be a world champion. No question. I personally think this form of MJF right now, I still feel he's the devil. I still feel he's the snake. They have plenty of baby faces there, you know, that I don't see MJF being a new CM Punk. I don't see him being this, you know, cutting pipe bombs and, you know, being a representation of the fans. I almost feel like MJF loses and then MJF realizes, the fuck have I been doing the last couple of weeks? I'm showing sympathy. I'm standing around and, you know, I'm the fucking devil and I'm not acting like the devil. The devil hasn't come to say, even if you're in hell and the devil, you got a mass murderer in hell. If the mass murderer is being attacked, the devil's not coming to make the save. The devil's the devil. A snake is not going to show sympathy to another animal. You know, look at that fable with the snake that Jake Roberts used to tell that story. Trump used it in his earlier elections. You know, oh, come to me, snake. Oh, it's not in. You take the snake in. The snake almost dies. You know, you feed the snake. You water the snake. You let the snake rest. The snake comes back to health. And you did a good deed and this and that. And then the snake bites you in the neck. And then you're bleeding and you're about to die. You're like, snake, you were going to die. I gave you food. I gave you shelter. I gave you water. I comforted you. I gave you a place to stay, to be protected. I saved your life. Why did you do this to me? And the snake looks around and says, look, you dumb fuck. I'm a goddamn snake. Period. When MJF talks about the CM Punk promo from 15 plus years ago, there's no leeway with a snake. MJF is not acting like a snake right now. He's not acting like the devil. I think MJF loses, and I think MJF realizes that he lost because he took his eye off of what he is, the fucking devil. You're the devil. You're the snake. You better act like one. I think that's what's going to happen. So we will see. But I'm going with John Moxley to retain. Maybe after the match is over, maybe MJF just loses it. Maybe he loses it. But I personally, I still cannot buy in MJF as a clear-cut babyface. Just don't see it. I just don't see it. Look, a babyface MJF is a more mild promo. Doesn't have to curse as much other than the usual words. Doesn't have to call people crackhead whores. Doesn't have to go after the audience. You know, he just mocks his opponent. You know, it almost feels like Elias. Remember when Elias turned babyface? You know, and then you realized why that totally fucked up Elias. Because Elias, every time he went to a different town, he had new ammunition. You go to Jersey, you could talk about, you know, their teams, or you could talk about their politics. You go to Los Angeles, you could talk about crime. You go to Florida, you could talk about this. Every state, you have different things that you could use to piss off the fans. You got a shitty football team? No problem. You go to that state, you could bring up the football team. You go to another state that they totally impaled with something, you bring that up. When Elias turned babyface, the only person he can insult is his opponent. And after maybe a week or two, it got tiring. It got bored. It got stale. And then you realize, wow, this guy needs to be a heel. You know, and I think that's what's happening right now with Elias. That's why you see him like not really doing as much on TV, because, you know, he goes out there, you know, who's he going to talk shit about? You know, Chad Gable and Otis? After 2 weeks, that gets stale. So MJF, you know, he's, no, you want clear-cut heel. He is the devil. He's got to act like the devil. The devil is not winning on Saturday. MJF is going to realize that he took his eye off the ball. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, look, I could be way off on that. But, you know, if you look at my track record, looking at the Bray Wyatt, Uncle Howdy, Uncle Harper, you think of Austin Theory was never being buried. You look at all the other things. I mean, we've been pretty on point and analyzing almost everybody out there. So that's my gut feeling with this one. We will see. Just make sure you are well-rested Saturday, because this is going to be a long one. And it's not a knock on AEW, but it is going to be between the pre-show and everything else. You're talking 5+ hours. And then for those that are going to watch the media scrum afterwards, you're talking 6 to 7 hours. So once again, just a reminder, I will be doing a show Saturday morning at 11 a.m. I will not be doing a recap of Full Gear until Sunday night at 8 o'clock. I want to give two quick shout-outs to Super Chats that came in earlier. Chris Cutra, talking about Bron Breakker. He felt that Bron looked the best he ever looked last night. He was explosive and going 100 miles an hour. Also, whoever put Booker T back on commentary is a sick and twisted individual. He's awful. Shucky, 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 ducky, quack, quack. Chris, Bron versus Von Wagner was missing something yesterday. It was an okay match, and it wasn't just we knew the outcome. Bron Breakker looked smooth yesterday. Bron Breakker, you could see it's coming together. It's putting together. The problem with Bron Breakker right now is his choice of opponents. Apollo Crews looks great. He could still go. JD McDonagh, I'm shocked at how much the fans out there are warming up to him. You know, even fans outside of NXT. But the problem is, does it feel like Bron Breakker is going to lose to Apollo Crews? I just rhymed. Is he going to lose to JD? It doesn't feel it. You know, when a champion feels threatened of the title, that's where it works. And Bron Breakker, I think people are starting. Look at the rating yesterday. Last week, their rating was 664,000. This week, it was 663,000. Only a 1,000 viewership change. Not a big deal. But you would think with two heavyweight championship matches, Mandy Rose defending, Bron Breakker defending, contract signing, Indashir reforming. You would think that there might have been a little bit extra buzz. Maybe you get a little uptick in the ratings, and it didn't move. And this is Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker has not wrestled on TV every single week. You would think, okay, you know, title defense, Von Wagner, that would attract more eyes, and it didn't. So I think the problem with Bron is, you know, we got to find the right opponent for him. And right now, I don't know if there is one. And as far as Booker T, like I said earlier, I think Booker T eventually leaves the commentator's table. I think that was done because of Pat McAfee. I think Pat McAfee, they had to throw some shift some stuff around. And Booker T obviously was not going to join Michael Cole on SmackDown. They needed somebody, you know, like a Wade Barrett or even a Corey Graves if he would have done SmackDown. But Corey, obviously, the stuff with Carmella, you know, he needs a little bit extra time off. And at the same time, though, you don't want Corey doing double duty for months. I mean, that's a lot to put on someone. All right. And last for tonight, Ronnie C., thank you for the five spot, my friend. After beating Alba Fire last night again, who dethrones Mandy Rose? Wow. You know, a lot of us out there thought a couple of months ago, Nikita Lyons had this incredible momentum that many of us thought, hey, she might be the one to dethrone Mandy Rose. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't feel that in the least. Cora Jade is a main roster star in the making. She still needs more time. I don't see Cora Jade becoming world champion anytime soon. I know a lot of you out there will focus on Roxanne Perez, and I like Roxanne. She is a star in the making. She did well on SmackDown for that one match, but she still has a long way to go. If you actually watched her match when she was on SmackDown and then you watched her take on, who did she take on? Sonya Deville? Was that who she faced? Like you could see that, you know, that she has still a long way to go. I do not think that Roxanne Perez is ready anytime soon. So my answer to Ronnie's question, I think who dethrones Mandy Rose may not be currently in NXT. We might see someone from the main roster go down to NXT for a couple of months. Not similar to what Dolph Ziggler did to Bron Breakker. That was a learning. That was trying to show that Bron Breakker, you know, made some mistakes and he overcame it. And that's to develop his character further. You dethrone Mandy Rose, you did something monumental. So whoever that person is to dethrone Mandy after all this time, sure, it's not the level of Roman Reigns, but once you get to a reign this long, whoever it is, it's got to be big. And it can't be a fluke, and it can't be someone who's not ready. So I personally think right now, nobody on the NXT roster, nobody stands out. If Nikita Lyons could get some of that momentum back, I could see Nikita Lyons possibly getting it. I do think that NXT Stand and Deliver might be the night that Mandy Rose loses her championship. So we'll see. Maybe Doudrop. If Doudrop were to go to NXT for a little while, maybe she could grab it. I don't know. I'm not saying that she's the one, but I think whoever it is not currently on the NXT roster. We will see. Now, somebody asked me earlier, I haven't really looked at it yet, but so don't quote me on the time, but someone asked me, is it true that NXT Stand and Deliver WrestleMania weekend is going to be at like 9:30 in the morning, New York time? And I didn't check the time yet, but my gut feeling is yes. Yes, because it's happening. I think it's happening, what, the same day as night one of WrestleMania? And it's Los Angeles. There's a three-hour time difference. So if you do it in L.A. and you do it, let's say, at 12 o'clock, Stand and Deliver ends, let's say, 2:30. By the time you get everybody out of there, now you're talking 3:30, maybe even 4 o'clock. You know, so would, even if it airs in California 12 noon their time, there's a 3-hour time difference. So yeah, NXT Stand and Deliver will occur, as far as time goes, in the Northeast. It will occur in the morning. So I'll get all those details. We got plenty of time to get that all together. But with that said, I'm going to jet out of here. I hope everyone enjoyed tonight's Dynamite. I hope you enjoyed yesterday's NXT. Saturday's pay-per-view, Full Gear, is solid from top to bottom. You look at the matches again. I mean, really, there's no bad match. You really look at it. Is there really a bad match on there that you could complain about? I really can't find one. The only one that we really don't know yet is who's going to face Ethan Page. That might be the shakiest one of them all. But top to bottom, it's a solid card. And Charlie says 1 p.m. is Stand and Deliver, which would be 10 a.m. in New York. So, yeah, that's pretty much what we figured. So, but enjoy Stand and Deliver, everyone. Enjoy Rampage on Friday. Rampage has got a nice lineup. I will be in a watch party Friday for a little while. So if you want to join us Friday for the watch party. I don't have it in front of me here, but Saturday I got a show you a gift that I got from somebody in WWE that, you know, he said, give it away. I don't want to give it away yet, but it's something I think is going to be extremely valuable in the future. It's has to do with autographs. And then one of you out there won a contest back in September. I shipped your prize and you never claimed it. So I got it sent back to me, but what was fucked up was they put it in my P.O. box and it was folded in half. So I'm going to open it live on the air Saturday and reveal which one of you made me send a prize to you, autographed, and you didn't claim it. So now I have to throw it away because it's all folded and fucked up and everything. So that'll be Saturday morning. So everyone, have a nice rest of your week. If you enjoyed this episode, give it a thumbs up. I know we went 2 hours instead of 90 minutes. You know, we got a pay-per-view predictions that we had to do tonight, and, you know, that was warranted the extra time. There's some very important matches there, and we got some returns, you know, not just the Elite, but Saraya, and then we got a few other surprises, and you know that they're not done. They're not done with their, you know, their matches, so they may add another one or two. I'm a little surprised that that Ortiz-Eddie Kingston match for Rampage Friday with Takeshita and Akiyama, I'm surprised that wasn't a kickoff match for Saturday. I'm a little surprised that they're using that for Rampage. I mean, Rampage last week, they had a horrible rating again. And I heard Orange Cassidy and Lee Moriarty. Well, it was Lee Johnson, right? Well, regardless, it only did, that quarter hour only did like 411,000 viewers. Think that that's almost 38% less than what NXT does. I mean, I think that's pretty powerful. And I know somebody's going to say, well, it's 10 to 11 and NXT is, you know, 9 to 10, you know, when they do that. But still, you know, it's kind of a really lousy, disappointing number. But all right, everyone, I'm going to jet out of here. Much love as always. Thank you for the support. And I will catch you all again Saturday morning, 11:05 a.m. Eastern for the Don Tony Show. Remember, we will definitely talk about these trademarks. I don't want to give any hints of what I think is going with this, but I don't think people should be as concerned as they are, thinking that, you know, Sasha Banks is not returning to WWE. I will get into that Saturday and a bunch of other things. And I think my Photoshop skills were pretty good in this one. So China, I'm still working on it. It's still all new to me, everyone. I have nobody helping me, you know. So the only people that help me is all of you. You uplift me, and you make this fun, and that's what matters. So hit that thumbs up. Not trying to kiss your ass, but you all have a good night. Enjoy SmackDown on Friday, Rampage, Full Gear, and see you all again Saturday morning.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now? Now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.